Hello and welcome to the Shepherd Walwyn podcast series. My name is Jonathan Brown. Shepherd Walwyn is a campaigning book publisher based in London, England. Our purpose is to uncover and promote new ideas to society's oldest problems. And whilst our specialty is ethical economics, something Anthony Werner, our driving force for over 40 years, has pioneered, we have branched out over the years to other related areas such as the environment and the lives and works of society's change agents. These podcasts promote ideas we're convinced can actually help us build a better society for all of us. So have a listen and be sure to share with your friends if you like them, but also tell us what you think. These are debates we all need to be part of. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Today we welcome back one of our favourite authors, Eddie Bullen-Moria. Now since we last spoke to Eddie, his book Unfolding Consciousness has won book awards. He's appeared on many podcasts, launched a reader series with Dr. Alex Gomez-Marin, a long-term collaborator with the illustrious Ian McGilchrist. And he's also launched the ebook version of this incredible work and is about to launch a series with the Theosophical Society of America. Now, we get into all of these things in this update, but jump straight in with a conversation about free will and whether we're actually determined, as the latest bestseller from Robert Sapolsky assert. I was wondering if, through all the interviews that you've had, have there been any questions in particular that you felt were particularly pertinent or resonant?
I think the question that always emerges is trying to marry the scientific perspective, the mainstream scientific perspective, with the spiritual perspective, and the fact that so many scientists are now crossing the Rubicon, so to speak, into embracing a more spiritual perspective, an esoteric point of view, and are not completely hidebound by materialism. So that theme, in whatever form and shape, seems to emerge, or, you know, quite often, and it's a very relevant theme.
And have you come across Robert Sapolsky's latest book, Determined?
No, I haven't, no.
So one of the things that we've just been talking about is the way in which that science and scientists appear to be offering or moving towards a more intricative view.
Right.
That touches upon the perennial philosophy and the insights that you share. Let me just read this from Robert Sapolsky, who's, it says, one of the world's greatest scientists of human behavior, the best-selling author of Behave, shows that free will does not exist, and challenges to rethink the notions of choice, identity, responsibility, justice, morality, and how we live together.
Well, this question of determinism and free will never leave human questioning and human endeavor as long as people operate through dichotomies. You know, if one engages just the left brain, one will see things in black and white terms. It's either determined or it's free will. But these are enormous words, free will. The point to ask, or the question to ask ourselves, is at what level are we talking of free will? A baby of 3 months or whatever, even less, one says, has a tremendous amount of free will. He only has to scream and yell, and it gets all the attention from its loving parents. But that is one aspect of free will. Of course, it has yet no free will over its behavior and its thoughts and actions. So the way to look at it is an increasingly concentric circles, that the more one evolves, the more one develops, the more free will one has. And with that free will comes tremendous responsibility. To say there is no free will and therefore it's all random, well, you might as well talk of the Nazi behavior and what's going on in the world now. Well, you know, it's just one of those things. But does that sort of argument really appeal to our inner senses, to our inner feeling of justice and order and divinity? It doesn't. So free will and determinism are really polarities, and we operate in that land, in that current, in that the region bounded by free will and determinism, depending on where we are standing now.
Do you know, I'd like to get onto this because I think our listeners would really appreciate it. That if they haven't already seen it or heard it, your series with Dr. Alex Gomez-Marin, who was a longtime collaborator with the likes of Ian McGilchrist and Rupert Sheldrake. I've been going back through book one, which I know at the time of doing this podcast, you've just finished book one, and using your conversations with Alec as a reader and as a primer for going back and looking at the content.
Right.
I was wanting to see, because I've also been reading a book that you recommended as well, and I just wondered how you come into harmony with the divine sequence.
Well, interestingly, the divine sequence relates back to this whole question of free will. From one standpoint, our will is only the divine will, you know, thy will be done. So our actions, our thoughts, our behavior, in one sense, is a flow down, if you like, a projection of the divine will, the divine thought. That doesn't mean we behave in a divine manner, because our route on the way down, there is no end of distortion and pollution. So by the divine sequence, do you mean the manifestation of the divine at various levels? Is that what you mean?
Well, I was reading the book with the conversation with Alex, you recommend, and it's written in the first book, Ralph Waldo Trine's The Infinite.
Yes, yes.
And that's one of the statements at the very beginning of the book of being in tune with the divine sequence and being in harmony.
In tune with the infinite, yes.
And I was just thinking about how you as a pianist and how you resonate every day with that stunning Steinway that you've got.
Well,
and it's you getting into harmony, isn't it? And your physical being. I know that. I mean, it's one of those things that if more people could spend time in your piano room, I think you could really, they would experience what resonance was, because that instrument changes. You can feel the resonance, can't you, of that incredible instrument?
Yes, you can. And it's all to do with one of your favorite phrases, Jonathan, being in the flow. And I can certainly vouch for the fact that, I mean, I'm sure every artist, musician can, that there are some days when you are in the flow and some days when you're not. But I like the word resonance. And the more one can be in tune with or in resonance with the music, with the composer, and with the instrument, then there is no sense of separation as such between the various aspects of one's being. You are your instrument. The composer is you, so to speak. But the minute one, or the moment one has extraneous thoughts, obviously, typically before a performance, I'm nervous and who's the audience and am I going to play well? Then when the lower self, the ego, starts to raise its silly little head, that obviously is blocking the flow. It's putting pebbles and boulders in the way of the flowing stream. But what you have alluded to is the power of music and how important, I feel, music and art supports and complements science.
Yeah. Yes. And there's, I don't know if it was in your book or in another work I've been reading recently, which is saying that some questions can't be answered with words.
No, they can't. And one only has to listen to a favorite piece of music or play it in one's mind. And if I said to you, well, describe it in words, I think you'd be lost for words, especially a piece of music that reduces one to tears, and there are many such pieces. You know, describe it in words. Well, you can't. You could describe the experience, which is a different matter. But you wouldn't be describing the factual content. If you talked about waveforms and decibels, that's only talking about the physical manifestation of the music. You're not talking about the inner content of it.
No.
And I was delighted to hear the whole series by Donald MacLeod on Beethoven last year, where he was talking to Professor Julian Allward, professor of engineering at Cambridge. And it's so wonderful to hear an engineer and a scientist say, poets are the legislators of the age. It emphasizing the importance of poetry and music to a scientist, because the poet is a visionary and a mystic almost by nature, he can foresee into the future and therefore in that sense legislate where humanity is moving and going.
And I came across an author called Neil Donald Klotz, who studies the Aramaic, Jesus in the original Aramaic language.
Right.
And consequently, has got some very unusual views around what various things mean and interpretations. And one of the things that he comes across, the actual language itself, suggests that we are breath. And every time we breathe, our purpose is to connect with the big breath, which is what yes. your thing would be consciousness or...
prana, the vitality, if you like. Yes.
Right.
Well, certainly, that's a very good, it's more than a metaphor. I think, really, Jonathan, it's a fact. It's a physical fact in one sense, but it esoterically, it's a fact of when you breathe, you connect with the greater breath. Your heartbeat connects with the greater heartbeat and pulse of the earth and the universe.
Mm.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, Eddie, what was that when you set out with the series with Alex? What was the original intention of doing that?
The original intention was really, as Alex did with Ian McGilchrist, to unfold, unpack the work in reasonable sections and groups. Originally, we talked of podcast on each chapter, then deciding that was a bit ridiculous and artificial, you know, be into 30 podcasts. But the chapters follow very good groupings. I mean, for example, the mainstream ideas on consciousness, the enlightened ideas, William James, the mystery teachings, and then in volume two, the constitution and nature of man, meaning human beings, of course, not gender. The transitional states after death. So in terms of groupings, the idea was to go through these chapters as logical groups and see if converse about them. And I've learned a lot from Alex, as I have indeed, without exaggeration. I learned from you as well, Jonathan.
But you know, I think that's one of the. That's very kind of you to say, Eddie.
Thinking of
one of the things that struck me listening to you and Alex was it was wonderful that someone understood the work almost as finely as you, because interviewing you was so far out of my depth.
That was refreshing. So much in tune. And I wouldn't say I felt any differently when we did our early podcasts.
Again, that's
not so much a question, Jonathan, of knowing the subject. It's a question of sensitivity to the subject, which is different from knowing, sort of intellectual knowing. You know, knowing almost gets in the way, because then you start arguing and seeing differences where they don't exist. But to be in tune, Ralph Waldo trying in tune with the infinite, in tune with the subject.
That's a wonderful distinction. And I think one of the, and that's essentially when I look at and think about the podcasts that I've watched you do, of which there's been many, you know, Thinking Aloud podcast and some of the great and the good of the genre, right? It was just what I particularly liked is how surprised the listeners are when the interviewer has a community and they're in on the chat and they're listening to you live and then they come in with questions. The number of times they've been utterly taken aback by your openness and approachability and your encouragement to their questions And I think you've resonated with their sensitivity is what I took from it.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan, for that. I would have all the time in the world for a sincere question. I've yet to get the smart aleck who tries to catch you out. With those sort of people, just politely forget it. You know.
But,
I would never turn down a question on the basis of, well, I know more than you. And, you know, I mean, that is totally arrogant. One learns as much from the questioner as the question. The Gibran, you know, here it is. I mean, it's one of my favorite books in The Prophet. Towards the end, the Prophet says, farewell to the people of Orphalese before he boards his ship. But then he says words to the effect that, well, you're asking me questions, but wasn't I also the questioner of those questions? So the more one can make it interactive without trying to sort of show how clever one is, the more the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So, you know, two people asking and conversing with sincerity and intelligence, the whole that emerges is greater than the two.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And I noticed that, and with, you know, just congratulations in order for being awarded Book of the Year by the Scientific and Medical Network. Is that something? So just as a question, my sense is that you get more from someone listening in and having a chat, or even reading the books, and then asking a sincere question, than you do around external accolades of Book of the Year and other such endorsements.
It's both. I would be completely disingenuous to say that the external accolade, when it comes from the right source, is not a source of great encouragement. Honestly, it's a humbling experience. I don't mean humbling, doesn't mean humiliating, no way. It makes one humble that someone has taken the trouble to do this, and it encourages me to strive even more to get the message across impersonally, even more to write more distinctly and more purposefully, so that the wisdom, which is not mine, is disseminated on an even wider front. And the other external accolade, if I can put it that way, came from none other than King Charles. But do you know that?
No, I didn't.
Well, just before the coronation, I dropped the volumes at Clarence House. And I got a very nice letter addressed to Shepherd Walwyn. I didn't put my personal address, you know. They his private secretary wrote me a letter addressed to Shepherd Walwyn. And it would appear that the king read some of it from the remarks that were made in that letter. It wasn't a thank you ever so much, I'll read it kind of thing. It was a little more pointed. So, you know, I was very touched by that before the coronation, the king would have time to respond so eloquently.
Well, no, I think of no better work than but to study, because I was also looking at the phrase "know thyself," which we've looked into before. But it's only reading Ralph Waldo Trine's stuff, and also the Neil Douglas Klotz work on the Aramaic teachings of Jesus, is what it actually means, and that it isn't to become more self aware in a sense of my own personality, of whether I'm in a Myers-Briggs, I'm this type, or I've got this, is actually to recognize that you are the breath of God, or you are part of the infinite.
Yes, the Myers-Briggs and the other psychological taxonomy is not to be underrated, but it does deal with the mortal self, see the vesture. But what you have just touched on is the immortal self that expresses through the mortal vestures.
Yes, and I understand you have it.
Means understand thyself. My goodness, it takes many lifetimes.
Yeah, and it's almost
if you let yourself forget it. There are situations where you make a fool of yourself to yourself, literally.
Mm.
And you realize how much more there is to learn and to be aware of. But never to beat yourself up, which is easily done, of course.
No, for definite. And we have a series with the Theosophical Society of America beginning soon.
That's right.
Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, that is starting in February, early February, workshops. I prefer to use the word workshop than lecture, because workshop implies interaction, and that's the whole idea of it. So I've generally structured it around the three volumes, so four courses, three volumes, where the first one is the panoramic survey that contrasts science with the perennial philosophy and on consciousness and humanity, and provides an overall survey and appreciation of the field of inquiry, acknowledging the strengths of science, but also pointing out its deficiency in answering questions on deeper issues such as death and consciousness, which it frankly can't do at the moment, and therefore complemented by the mystery teachings of all ages. The second workshop will be peering down the microscope, which is an examination of our internal landscapes, the subtle bodies, what we mean by soul, and the immense teachings on death and transition, or death is transition, from all the world cultures, religions, and philosophies, and the infinite complexities of the human mind, of course. The third workshop, looking through the telescope, because we look through the microscope at the human being, is internal geography, of course. Looking through the telescope, the wider context of the human being in relation to the universe, where mysticism, symbolism, and the Hermetic axiom are absolute keys to unlock this mystery. And a huge part of that course of Volume 3 is explaining in detail the process from the divine to the human being in flesh. Why is it that an external sensation to the external senses results in an internal experience? We just said a little earlier that, yeah, I can ask you to just listen to a wonderful piece of music or look at a wonderful painting. It's difficult to describe it, but you suddenly experience it. Now, what is the nature of that experience? So these rather deep subjects will form most of the fourth workshop, conversing on the hard problem of consciousness and the nature of experience, and how the wisdom teaching resolves many problems in conventional mainstream science. Never knocking science. The whole idea is to lift science to a higher metaphysic, to a higher standpoint, where it embraces the spiritual approach. But it doesn't mean we are neglecting science, because science is an interpretation of the world. So the greatest scientist can be deeply spiritual, but he can still do his science because that is his interpretation of the world in that context. And today I heard a wonderful interview by Professor Lorna Dawson, who is a forensic scientist dealing mainly with soil, and her forensic insight into soil has led to solving many high-profile murder cases just by examining the soil on the shoes, on the clothes, in the region of the crime. But what she said was amazing, that one teaspoonful of soil contains 10 billion microorganisms, which is more than the population of the whole world. Now, coming from a top scientist, and her work is so well recognized that people have written crime fiction around her pieces. But this underscores the perennial philosophy, the occult teaching, that life is teeming with life forms. I'm sorry, the Earth, the planet, the universe is teeming with life. At all levels, there is no such thing as dead matter. So from the infusoria of virus, bacteria, all are teeming with life at their level. And all of these lower life forms are evolving through the next higher life form as the parent. And it's thanks to science that we found this out. I was so struck by the feeling in her voice. I mean, it's quite wrong to say the cold scientist. There was tremendous feeling in her voice. And I think at moments she was almost cheerful when she was recounting some of the high-profile cases that she was involved in.
And the other great news, Eddie, is that your ebook is now out.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. I realize it's a difficult one because there's so many platforms and it has to be compatible on all those platforms. So I'm very grateful to Shepherd Walwyn for that very much. So.
Well, and I think that what was one of the things that concerned me when you said that you know, that was cut, you wanted it in ebook and everything else, was how to replicate to any extent the quality of the formatting and the work that you and your team did to make this book a reality. And I was just looking at it again this afternoon before we spoke, and it isn't the books. And so if someone's got the £100 that it costs, or I know we've got a discount running as well right now, then for me the books are just, they're so rich, and it's so beneficial to have the books. For a quarter of the price to get the digital books, and I was looking at it, I can't read your work on Kindle because it's just, Kindle isn't big enough for me. No. But having said that, I was looking at it on my computer screen, and it was still an excellent reader experience. Not as good as the written books and the physical books, but still worthwhile.
Thank you for that, Jonathan.
Eddie, before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to say to the listeners?
What would they like to hear? That sounds a little cheeky. Well, look, I would say this, that no book says everything. I mean, that is so obvious. Don't get fixated on any one book. Keep your reading and exploration wide, even though you might by nature resonate with one author or one book more than another. But what I would say is, if you want me to tease out anything that's sort of unique about this, it's that I tried to show that science, religion, and philosophy are the colors that really emerge from the white light of truth when that white light passes through the prism of the human mind. So we break up truth into these various colors called science, religion, philosophy, all the rest of it. And the great poet Shelley said that life, like a dome of many colored glass, stains the white radiance of eternity. And I'm again pointing to how the poet can provide so much insight. So there is the white radiance of eternity, truth, which we then break up into the various streams with our little minds. But the clearer we can keep the minds, the closer we will be to the source of where that truth comes from. And the other unique features is showing the universality and the highest common factor of all the great mystery teachings, and how these teachings resolve so many problems in science. And by doing that, we understand what it means to be human.
What a wonderful closing thought. Eddie, as always, thanks for your time. And we'll post links in the description below for the series for people to subscribe to it in early February with the Theosophical Society in America. And also to get hold of the ebook as well, which is an amazing value and an utterly fantastic read.
Thank you, Jonathan, very much.
Thank you for listening to the Shepherd Whirlwind podcast. To explore these ideas further, be sure to visit our website, www.shepherdwhirlwind.com, and join our mailing list for news and special offers. Check out our authors and buy the books to learn more. And you can also find us on social media. Links are also on the website. And if you like the podcast, please head over to iTunes or Spotify to give us a review. It's surprisingly helpful in getting the ideas out there. So until next time, keep reading.